Welcome, everyone. You are listening to the Power Hour. Alan Myers here, sitting in, keeping the mic warm. I am joined today with my good friend and returning guest, Roman Valenzuela. Roman, how are you doing today?
Hey, Alan, I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
What do you mean, just pretty good? We're on the Power Hour. This is great.
Pretty good means excellent.
Okay.
I am doing absolutely fabulous.
Just had to translate that. For the listeners out there, we have a call-in number, and they tell me this one works. 717-300-1698. Again, 717-300-1698. And just to start off, I always like to promote this group that keeps us going, the Power Mall. Check him out. You can find him at thepowermall.com, or you can call him at 877-817-9829, because when you buy there, you're buying from the good guys. We begin. We do have a guest coming in, at least on the second hour, Judd Dunning. Really looking forward to it. But Roman and I are going to do a little wackadoodle news discussion.
Yes,
Roman,
are
you ready?
Oh, I'm ready.
Okay. You know, as I like to say, this is like leaving the teenager's home alone with the keys to the liquor cabinet, Corvette, and the credit card. What could go wrong?
let's get into the liquor cabinet.
Let's find out. First one. This is, and today on, it's not just the whack news. I want to bring a constitutional lens to some of this when applicable. And this one, I find it's applicable. Around July 28th, the Department of Justice came out and wanted to alert the states that they're closely tracking their 2020 election audits. And I saw this and, you know, whiskey tango, you know what? I'm thinking, are you kidding me? This guidance that's coming out is saying that what's being done or what is being proposed is unusual and exceedingly rare. And the Department of Justice wants to highlight that they must follow federal law in doing this. And they cite two laws. One is called the Civil Rights Act of 1960, and the other is the Voting Rights Act of 1965. And in the Voting Act of 1965, it goes on to say, no person shall intimidate, threaten, or coerce, or attempt to intimidate, threaten, or coerce any person for voting or attempting to vote. And it goes on and on and on. My first thought is, what a state does in its voting and how it summarizes them and possibly reviews them, this is none, absolutely none of the federal government's business. Your opening thoughts, Roman?
Well, so firstly, I feel like there should be some sort of governing body that figures out just exactly what the states and how the states are voting and gathering all of their information as far as tallies and whatnot are concerned. I really do believe that there should be some sort of unified system that all the states follow. That, in my opinion, would just kind of streamline the process and hopefully not leave any room for error. Because what you're saying is that, you know, the federal government should stay out of it and not dictate, but then who is there to kind of hold each individual state accountable?
Oh, I love this. All right. Let's go back in time. You know, we're going to get in our favorite.
Are we doing the Wayback Machine?
We're getting in the Wayback Machine. And
all right.
Off we go to 1787 and the Constitutional Convention and the four-month all-out verbal tussle that took place to come up with the Constitution. keep in mind, you had representatives of the states, and each they stopped being colonies when they signed off on the Declaration of Independence, and they became states. And to them, a state was independent, sovereign, kick your khaki, stay out of my business. Each one thought of it as a state. They thought of England as a state, Germany as a state, France as a state. That's the way they held themselves. And it was the representatives of each state that brought into existence the federal government. And the federal government was intended to have absolutely limited powers, as enumerated in Article 1, Section 8. There's 18 clauses. The federal government has no business in state business. In fact, when they created when they signed off on the Constitution, created the federal government, the federal government had two basic jobs. One was to deal with all the other parts of the world as one unit for the 13 states and deal with any interstate squabbles. That's it. That hasn't changed. Now, how the Constitution is being misread, misinterpreted, misapplied, that's the way I see it. But if a state's going rogue, whose responsibility is it? It's the citizens. It's not the federal government. And so for me, for the federal government to kind of push and threaten, I mean, to have a recount and say that this somehow is, an attempt at coercion, intimidation, threatening. No. The federal government has no business in here. And in a way, at least some states are standing up to them, but not enough. And I go back to the founding. I go back to what the states wanted.
Okay.
And as you and I have discussed before, and I've discussed on my program For the Republic, you look at the Federalist Papers. They're an incredible read because you learn what people were promising, as in those who supported the Federalist Papers, those who wanted the Constitution ratified. And you see what people feared, those writers of the anti-Federalist Papers who didn't want the Constitution ratified, or they feared certain aspects of it. Well, the promise was limited government, which means if I've got something going on in my state and I ain't bugging anybody else, you have no rights here. I just so that's my take on it.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from. I mean, the first thing that comes to my mind, the first word, is corruption. And so I understand that it's up to the citizens of the state in order to do something. That's a very grandiose and enlightened take on things. Unfortunately, I feel like the citizens of any state, at least in our current mentality, kind of don't realize what power they have. And so to leave it up to the state and its citizens to try to overcome whatever it is that, you know, their state government is doing, puts a lot of responsibility in the hands of these people. And that's what's really frightening to me, because, I mean, you know what they say, a rotten apple spoils the bunch.
Right.
So the fact that it's almost like a teenager that is emancipated. Okay. So now that you're emancipated, whatever it is that you decide is okay because of that emancipation. So when you report back to your parent, the parent has no say in what the teenager should do. So that's how I'm viewing that as.
Oh, this is great. Okay. In your analogy, who's the parent?
Well, the parent should be the federal government.
No.
I feel like there needs to be some sort of like hierarchy there.
There is. There absolutely is.
You're leaving it up to the state, though. So the state is at the pinnacle of that hierarchy. And what you're saying?
No, not quite. But okay. Again, I love this back and forth. the federal government is a creation of the states.
Yes.
So in that moment in time, to use the analogy, you know, some of the words we've been using, the parents are the states. The child is the federal government.
Question for you then. Then why should the state, which is the parent, have to report to the child? An answer to it.
Sure. This, again, we're not looking at this in a biological way.
No.
But the federal government was created, and one of the big arguments over this was, do we need this, or are we going to – the 13 states, are we going to divide ourselves into three or four different confederations and all the potential problems that would exist there? Ultimately, it was decided that the best thing for the 13 states was to have one central federal government to speak for them to the rest of the world.
Yes.
Do the treaties, do the trade, hopefully no wars. That was, and deal with any interstate squabbles. After that, the federal government. In fact, when it came up in the discussion at the convention about Congress had to meet once a year, some people objected and said that was too much. That's how limited they saw the federal government. Last thing on this, what you brought up an interesting point is that this really isn't ultimately for me the state's problem. This is, and you know my term, citizen owner.
Uh-huh.
We're the owners of this thing. And where is our educational system in raising up our children and ourselves to be educated about the Constitution, about civic duty? It's not there.
No.
I just don't want an overreaching federal government because, number one, it's not lawful. It's not constitutional. And number two, they don't do a good job. So thank you for that, Roman. So now we're going to move on to another one.
Right.
Okay.
<What's> next?
Next one. And we've got a break in a couple minutes, but we're 10 minutes. We're good. This one, it's an interesting battle. You've got a battle between Nancy Pelosi, Democrat senator out of California, and the president. And Pelosi is saying that the president does not have the legal authority to forgive federal student loans. On the other side of that, you have Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer out of New York, who basically is insisting that the president forgive all student loans. We're going to get to that topic, but let's jump back a little bit. And does the federal government legally, constitutionally, have any power to make student loans, to secure student loans? I'm going to take the position they don't.
All right.
And given that, okay – and this is what's never in the conversation. And I do have a sense of understanding of why this topic's out there. We've had a huge economic hit in this country for the last year and a half or so.
Mm-hmm.
And I get it. I dig it. I don't play light with it. I understand. But when something is going to be done, especially from a governmental standpoint, it needs to be legal. It needs to be constitutional.
Yes.
And let's say just for the moment, let's say the federal government, the president, whomever, could forgive student loans. Now, are these federally funded student loans? Are these student loans funded by someone else? How's the payment going to be made to the lender? Where's the funding coming from? They're not talking about this. Your opening thoughts.
Well, so you bring up a lot of really great points. So I will take the opposite stance of you, and I will say, yes, the federal government should, because my logic is that there needs to be some sort of standardized education. We are the United States of America, so we should be united in the education process and the education that is offered to all of our citizens. I think that that's an enlightened approach. I think that is what a first world country, not only a first world country, but the most powerful first world country in the world should approach educating its citizens. So the fact that the government should allow and should offer, you know, whether it be grants, whether it be loans, this and that, I think it's totally within its bounds. Now, when you say, does it have the legal authority? You bring up a really good point. Constitutionally, as of now, it does not. Should it pass the law so that way it makes it constitutional? I believe that it should. Now, what this opens up a can of worms, because there's a couple of things that kind of come to that are red flags. Now, when you standardize something like education, there, as history has shown, there kind of is there's a way that the human agenda, the human side of it, tends to get pushed. And so the fact that we have to check the people in charge of dictating what kind of education is standardized, that is what is a scary teeter-totter in my position. As far as the cost of education, I think the cost of education is absurd in this country. And that really, truly is what is most important. And so the federal government standardizing education for its citizens, I think, would be an important first step in broaching that topic, because there's just everyone should be afforded the opportunity to an amazing education.
Good points to chat about. I love this. All right. We'll start with where you and I agree. When we're talking about cost of education, I believe we're both talking about college, master's.
Absolutely.
Whatever. Okay. Is it obscenely expensive?
Yes.
Absolutely. A lot of these, from my understanding, a lot of these, let's say, Ivy League schools, they're incredibly expensive annually. Yet they have billion-dollar endowments. This doesn't make sense to me.
No.
I believe education is way too expensive. And I remember a few weeks ago, I read an article about students, graduates who'd come out of master's programs with a massive amount of debt, and they're making decent but not great money. There's something wrong here. But when it comes to educating the youth, the children of this country, this to me is not a federal thing. At most, it's a state thing. It's much more a community thing. Once again, this is about getting people involved in their own lives. However, if this should change the way you would like it to be, okay, this isn't passing a law. This is getting a constitutional amendment done. That's the hurdle. But what I don't like is, and I think you agreed, whether it's good intended or not, if it's not legal, why is our federal government doing it, and why are we allowing it to do it? Because we don't know enough individually and as a group. We have not been educated enough about our Constitution, its limitations on the federal government, and its demands of its citizen owners to take charge. Education is absolutely essential. That's why, to me, as a parent, I want to know what's going on, and I want to be involved personally. I don't want somebody in D.C. telling me what my children have to learn and what they can't learn. That's too much power. needs to be local.
So if I could just chime in really quick.
Absolutely.
So when you say that, you know, when you're trying to say that it's too much power when you dictate what a child should learn. Now, what scares me is the fact that you're saying that you're leaving it up to the communities themselves. So when you leave something up to the communities, then there's no standardization there. So what ends up happening is that, say you're born into this community A, who has these beliefs and they teach these beliefs, and then there you go. And then you're born into community B. They have a completely different set of beliefs and ways, and then there you go. And then you have community C. Now you have a whole bunch of disjointed communities teaching children who are the most receptive to education and learning due to their age, that are growing up that aren't on the same level. That is what I'm concerned about. And so what's that?
I hear your concern. We're going to go to break in about 8 seconds. But when we come back, we'll finish this. This is fun.
Oh, I love this. Let's pour ourselves another drink from Mom and Dad's cabinet.
Wait a minute. Let me get my water here. anyway, this is Alan Myers, The Power Hour, with Roman Valenzuela. And when we come back from our break, we will continue our discussion of wackadoodle news. Yeah, it's real. It's out there. And we're going to take the constitutional lens to it. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back after these very important messages.
This is Jay at the Power Mall. I thought I would discuss an item that's very valuable to my personal health and well-being. That product is called Curcumin X4000. Its potent antioxidant properties have been shown to decrease swelling and allow us to enjoy our golden years. Take control over your health today, guys. Order Curcumin by calling 877-817-9829 or order at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
I don't know where to start. There's so many products you guys offer. I think one of the first things I ever ordered from you guys was your clay. The clay is miraculous. I could not do without that. And the charcoal, you know, you can get yourself in a bathtub to kind of help take the toxins out. So just those two alone, but I could go on to the Optivita silver lozenges. Of course, then the Oregaresp and the P73, the oil of oregano, and your Vitamir toothpaste. Again, I could go on and on and on.
Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Hi, this is Catherine at the Power Hour. The Power Mall began when Joyce Riley discovered an all-natural soap that heals skin issues and can replace your bathing, laundry, and household cleaning products. That soap is Miracle 2 and is made from natural minerals and coconut extract with no added fragrances or colors and is naturally concentrated and biodegradable. I guarantee after you discover how amazing Miracle 2 products are, you'll recommend them to everyone you know. To order, call 877-817-9829 or visit thepowermall.com today. You'll learn why so many people say, it's not just soap, it's a miracle.
Just recently, we both started on the lithium balance. I want to keep my memory. My two in-laws are dealing with, the Alzheimer's. They're in their 90s, and I see it. I don't want to be like that, and I've heard you talk about lithium to, you know, improve our memory and keep us up there.
Call 877-817-9829. That number again is 877-817-9829. Buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. the Power Hour has been in existence since the turn of the 21st century. It is more critical than ever for you to sign up for our free newsletter and our breaking news. Simply text the word Power Hour to 22828 on your mobile phone, or sign up when you visit thepowerhour.com. Our website again is thepowerhour.com, or text Power Hour to 22828. Together, our legacy will live on for centuries.
Boost your immune system naturally this year with olive oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that olive oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
Welcome back, listeners. You are listening to The Power Hour. Alan Myers here, sitting in, keeping the mic warm. My guest is Roman Valenzuela. We're going to continue our chat on wackadoodle news. But keep in mind, there's the Power Mall. PowerMall.com, or call 877-817-9829, Monday through Friday, 8 to 4 Central Time. When you do that, you get a buy from the good guys. And they've got a lot of specials this week, so check them out. ThePowerMall.com. Roman, welcome back.
Yes.
Okay, we were talking about the wrapping up on the education thing. I would say this, and that to me, education, let's call it the primary level, K through 12.
Uh-huh.
This is, to me, it's not that vague. This is about, in no specific order, this is about language. This is about history. This is about sciences, first arithmetic, then mathematics. These are not areas, to me, where you get into something that is not normally standardized.
Mm-hmm.
Bring the facts. Not the feelings, not the emotions. Bring the facts. Let everything else, religion, politics, let that come from the home. So to me, there's not a real problem with standardizing, because the education is just bring the facts on these topics.
Exactly. And so, that's what I was getting at as well.
So when that's done, then you, in essence, have a standardized general curriculum, because we're just bringing the facts.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We're moving on. Oh, geez. This one's fun. And we won't spend that much time on it, but there's been this eviction moratorium, as in landlords cannot evict tenants for lack of payment. And I understand the backdrop to this. You know, a lot of people have been having some really hard financial times. Mm-hmm. I absolutely get it. But once again, is this the federal government's place? And I'm going to say no. But here's the wacky, I mean, this is what really puts this into the wackadoodle news. Okay. You're aware of the moratorium, correct?
Yes, correct.
Okay. I'm just confirming.
Uh-huh.
It was apparently put in place. Again, there's no legislation here. No laws are being passed. It was put in place last September. Guess who put it in place?
Who?
CDC, Center for Disease Control. What authority does the CDC have in getting itself involved in private contracts between a landlord and a tenant, whether it's home or business? What power does the CDC have to do this? It has none. And this got pushed into acceptance. Without spending a lot of time, that is my big push.
Uh-huh.
You've got this thing. It has no legislative power. And shame on the state governments for not standing up. And shame on Congress for not standing up saying, wait a minute, we don't have the authority to do this. This idea of doing things in this country on mandates or directives, that is about as unconstitutional as you get. Yet we are being told in many ways, shapes, and forms, this is okay. Your thoughts?
Well, the fact that the CDC is the one that imposed that, that's a very interesting point to bring out. Obviously, the federal government had to allow that to happen because I don't think the CDC can just impose that without some sort of authority or authoritative power given to them. But I think what this country was faced with was something that was completely unknown to us. And so with the government shutting down and the economic impact at the time uncertain, I think it was wise that a government moratorium on evictions was imposed. But I see where you're coming from because there should have been some sort of laws passed, some sort of legislation, but there was not. So all of that was just completely gone over. I think if anything, that's just a testament to what the priorities of this country are. And that's a topic right now that is hotly debated. I think it's helped out a lot of people. I think it's going to end up screwing a lot of people in the end. And so the way that we approached the whole eviction thing, I think was wrong to begin with. Instead of suspending payments, I think that payments should have been reduced to a certain dollar amount, a certain percentage, this and that. When you completely stop a system in its tracks, and then put it on hold, there's going to be repercussions to that. And so that's what my biggest concern with this, because I want to say that it's about to end in, what, like a couple of months? And so they're trying to push it to extend it, no?
It was supposed to end just recently, and I don't know if it's being pushed. For me, the problem is every time we allow – the federal government to exercise force powers that it doesn't have, it's just going to get worse. And the other problem I have is that it's as if the federal government is telling everybody in this country, you don't know what to do. You don't know the right thing to do. You're not good people. We have to tell you and force you. No. That is absolutely wrong.
See, my biggest concern, though, is that when you do leave it up to the states, then you literally have 50 states who could be doing different things, 50 different things. And so, you know, back to the whole standardization thing, there needs to be some sort of governing force that at least creates some sort of standard as to what the eviction moratorium should be. Because what if, you know, what if Alabama has a certain thing that only affects people who are in low income, and then you have California who benefits this group? It's just that when you leave it up to the states, I feel like that's just a recipe for chaos.
Well, it's number one, whatever happens within a state is going to have to follow state law. The other is that this to me is really up to the people who are in the contract. As long as it's a legal contract, you're going to, again, because once we leave the legal framework, now it's a wild game. And when power is concentrated into the very few, which is the federal government, this is what people have fought for, against forever. To have more control, more say. I think there's enough good people in this world. They can make a good decision. Don't tell them they can't. They're too stupid. They're too lazy. They're too mean. They're too cruel. Mm-hmm. That they cannot make a good decision. Not everybody's going to make the good decision, or maybe not make the most helpful decision. But that's what contracts are about.
Yes.
And if you're going to say, oh, well, we found the exemption to the contract. Well, what's the next exemption? And then the next one. No.
See, Mike.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, my concern is I think it was trying to help out lower income families who live paycheck to paycheck. Honestly, the eviction moratorium, people who are wealthy are not going to be worried about getting evicted because they can cover it. They have the resources to do so. The eviction moratorium was to protect low income and families and people who were living paycheck to paycheck. So that way, you know, they're not screwed by this contract that they signed with another person. Yes, but because of the lockdown and because of the economic impact, which was beyond their control, that it's a form of protection. And I think that's what a lot of people forget of the whole point of that is. It's to protect them.
Well, I think that's very nice. but the thing is nothing. It, number one, it's not legal. It's not lawful. Two, it preempted the process. None of the really bad things started happening. So they jump. So the federal government jumps in and tells everybody in a quite illegal way, you can't do this, you can't do that.
Well, if they do get evicted, say they did get evicted, right? So say, right, you know, we left it up to the states, and now you have a large amount of lower income people who live paycheck to paycheck, who are bound by a contract, yes, and because the federal government can't protect them from something that is beyond their control, they are now evicted in basically an economic mini depression because everything was shut down. I just think that's why I
want to leave it to the people, because I believe in the goodness of people.
Well, I'm glad you do.
I do. And the other shot on this is, okay, if this went down, okay, first of all, the landlords, the property owners, well, they may have mortgages. And if they don't have renters, then they could be taken out too. So there's an incentive on both sides to work out some kind of deal. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm not going to – okay, the rent's X, so – but I need you to pay something. You pay me something.
Yes.
And we'll work it out. Mm-hmm. Okay, that process is gone. It's not there. And it's just the federal government's getting involved in something that it has no legal authority to do so. And this happens over and over again. And it never works out well. And the idea that, oh, the federal government will pay for it. Well, you and I know the federal government has no funding other than what it takes from us in taxes or what it's able to obtain in borrowing. And we're at $28.5 trillion in debt. This is absolutely unpayable. It's a Ponzi scheme. The federal government's running a Ponzi scheme because it has no for-profit business from which to repay the debt. And we're going to trust them with making personal decisions? I don't think so. So with a little bit to go, these are some short ones. Let's see. Let's go out of country for a moment, shall we?
Okay.
All right.
I'll get my suitcase.
Oh, pack light. We'll be back quick. You know how I'm a big fan of this CCP?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's reared its ugly head. This is the headline. Hong Kong citizens are arrested over children's books. See, you have in Hong Kong, you had this children's book. I think it's probably, you know, picture book. And it's in the Cantonese language. It's an animated series of books. And it uses the allegory of the wolf and the sheep to explain Hong Kong's political situation to the young children. China is represented by the wolf, and the president is represented as or called Chairman Wolf.
Oh, wow.
And the wolves attempt to take over the idyllic and peaceful sheep village. Now, you might find this odd, but China got mad. And it pressured the Hong Kong's National Security Police, complaining that the stories incite violence and stir up hatred. So five publishers and authors have been arrested under Hong Kong's new security law because these stories written for children, animated series, is stirring up hatred and inciting violence.
That's crazy. That blows my mind that they got – I mean, come on. They got arrested for that? I mean, but that's what happens when you live under a dictator like them. It's just
– Yeah. And
oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. See, yeah. And I think we've talked about this before, and it's out in the news that China wants to peacefully take over Taiwan.
Peacefully take over?
Whether they want it or not.
I love their wording.
Yeah. And they want to peacefully annex Taiwan. And Japan kicked in on this one some time ago. And you know, just to refresh everyone's memory, you know what China's response was?
Tell us.
China's response to Japan possibly intervening in this peaceful annexation that Taiwan doesn't want, is they will drop atomic bombs on Japan until it gives an unconditional surrender.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. But so much for that happiness. Let's see if we can find something. Oh, this is good. This is good. Have you heard the term – this is new to me too. Or new to me, maybe new to you. Have you heard the term long COVID?
Long COVID?
Yeah.
No, I am not familiar with that term.
Okay, this is a new term. It essentially means that certain symptoms of COVID linger long after the infection has resolved. Now, these lingering symptoms include brain fog, headaches,
mm-hmm.
fatigue,
mm-hmm.
coughing, shortness of breath, anxiety, dizziness on standing, and some other ones possibly. This mm-hmm. is according to the Health and Human Services group. Now, Do you think that these symptoms, I mean, coughing, of course, you could yes. tell that. How is it possible to objectively diagnose brain fog, headaches, fatigue, anxiety, and dizziness on standing?
Yeah, no. I think a lot of that is subjective. There are a few things there that can be actually monitored and recorded. But it's just when you mix things that are subjective and things that are objective, it becomes a muddy mess. I do know people who have caught COVID and they still struggle with their breath. They still get random fevers every now and then. So I can attest to that. As far as headaches are concerned, I think headaches come, you know, with your body just not being happy with what's going on with it. But brain fog and fatigue, I think that's kind of a stretch right there.
Well, the reason to bring this up is that, yeah, our good friends at the White House have announced that they want to make these long COVID symptoms to be considered a disability under various federal civil rights laws. And of course that's going to mean, well, if you're disabled, you need a payment.
Oh my and, God. I should go get COVID. God.
And somehow these problems 5 years after you got sick are attributable to only one thing. And therefore you are disabled and therefore you need to receive more taxpayer funded free money.
I think we're finally going to agree on something. I think.
Wait. Stop. Say that again. What?
I said, I think we're going to finally agree on something because that's just absurd. Absurd. Now that is beyond. That to me screams control completely. 100% control. What is that? You're going to be considered disabled because of symptoms from a disease that you caught 5 years ago. It just, that just blows me away.
Not only are you disabled, you poor child, but you need a payment from the federal government. And now the federal government literally cannot afford anything. That's why we have $28.5 trillion in national debt. But here's a kicker regarding – just throw this in for we're about to run out of money. The trustees – and this just shows how well the federal government runs programs. The trustees of the Social Security system some time ago had said that they were going to run out of excess funds by 2035. Excess funds is that up until I think this year, possibly last, more funds came into Social Security system than went out as benefits. Well, that's changed. And in the past, because they had surplus, whatever surplus was available was used to buy treasuries, which the federal government loved because now they have a ready buyer of treasuries. Well, going forward, less is coming in than going out, which means they're going to have to start liquidating or redeeming their treasuries, and no later than 2035, those funds are going to be gone, which means if everything stays the same, benefits are going to have to be cut significantly, maybe 20%. Well, given that we've had some economic problems, given that inflation is kicking in, and so benefits may get kicked up, they're going to run out of money quicker than 2035. Yet everyone out there, especially you young folks, you're paying into the system.
Yes.
That if everything is left as is, you're never going to get anything out. And the thing, this is the other thing, the misstatement. It's referred to as old age insurance. Well, if you have an insurance policy, it's a policy between the insured and the insurance company. It's a contract. Mm-hmm. And nothing can be changed in the contract unilaterally. Yet the federal government continues to make changes in the contract unilaterally. It's not insurance. This is just taxation and redistribution of wealth. And they're doing so well at it that this thing is going to run out of any excess funds no later than 2035, probably sooner. And then what?
And that's what's alarming, because we continue to pay into it. So where is all this money going?
Oh, that's a topic for another time.
So
we got less than 1 minute.
Okay.
And then when we come back from our break, please stay tuned. Listen to the great advertisers that support this program. When we come back, we're coming back and we're going to have a chat with Judd Dunning. He's quite the person out there. He's got a book out there that's we're going to probably talk about. And we're going to talk about his journey from going from a liberal to a conservative over many long years. This is the Power Hour. Right back.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. Hi, this is Jay at the Power Mall. I thought I would discuss an item that's very valuable to my personal health and well-being. That product is called Curcumin X4000. Its potent antioxidant properties have been shown to decrease swelling and allow us to enjoy our golden years. Take control over your health today, guys. Order Curcumin by calling 877-817-9829 or order at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.